You're listening to Powder Radio, brought to you by Powder Magazine. I'm Hadley Hammer, and this is Nausicaa Cast. Tune in each month as we dive into the lives of the leading ladies of the ski world. We had a bit of a switch up this month, and Rachel Burks will be joining me on the show for episode 2. Now, I have to warn you, most of this podcast is Rachel talking and me laughing in return, but that's what you get with Burks, sore abs and a permanent grin. Not only is Rachel hilarious and an incredible skier, but she's also well-read, insightful, and full of passion. I hope you enjoy the show.
Pat!
Can you hear me?
Right. There's a delay. I forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, Pat? Sorry, brain. How's it going, dude?
Good. How's it going?
Oh, it's going, dude. I'm moving a million miles an hour, but it's really, really good that I'm moving a million miles an hour, because yesterday I was absolutely dead. I was freaking, dude, I think I moved 4 times yesterday.
Like, oh my God.
I was so beat and worthless. So I've been going all day today. Feels good to be productive.
Man, should we jump right into it?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, well, I feel like you're well known for your laughter and hucking and just all around hilariousness, but I feel like a lot of people don't know about the brains behind Burks. And I know we got to spend a blissful week in the middle of Canada this year, and the first thing I learned about you was your interest in books. And while maybe no one else will care about the answers to this question, I would like to know what your favorite book was this past year that you read.
The past year?
Yeah, because I feel like all time is too hard, unless you know that
one,
too.
Oh, no, it's totally not too hard. I have a favorite book of all time. It's called Underworld by Don DeLillo. He's like, it's like the most amazing book in the world, and I love it. It doesn't have anything to do with vampires, and it doesn't have anything to do with like lichens and all those like Kate Beckinsale being super hot in like black, you know, like pleather, whatever she's wearing. It doesn't have anything to do with that, but it is called Underworld. And yeah, Don DeLillo is awesome. So that's definitely my favorite book of all time. And I guess in the past year, I can answer that. oh my God, I got super into. So I go in and out of science fiction, you know, or fantasy actually. And I got really into. Brandon Sanderson series. What were they? Sorry, I read a bunch. I'm like, it's kind of awkward. I don't even remember that. I left them all on the boat this summer. It's not The Way of Kings, because I didn't like that one. That one was really frustrating. This is really embarrassing that I can't. This is how much I read. I don't even remember the name of the book that I read. Yeah, it'll take me a second. But I do have the answer to that, and it's a fantasy book that's actually written by a Mormon author, which I was kind of hesitant to, like, jump into. Like, the last Mormon author I read was just kind of, I don't know, it was a little bit of a predictable plot, storyline, character development, whatnot, and I was just like, oh, come on, you know, like, this is way too predictable. So I was a little bit hesitant to jump back into it. But I jumped back into fantasy. And these aren't, like, little fantasy. Like, we're talking, like, I don't know, like, 1,300 pages for one book. It's so ridiculous. It's really embarrassing, but I just, like, I don't know. I can't get enough of it. So, but then I can, because I finished the series, and I was kind of bummed because it's not even over yet. So it is Brandon Sanderson. It's The Way of Kings. I was right. Sorry. There was just another one that I read a little while ago that I did not like. So it's Brandon Sanderson, The Way of Kings. There you go.
Okay.
Really fun stuff, you know. Takes a good solid, like, seriously, like, takes a good solid 2,000 pages before you actually get any proper character development. It's great. Oh, my gosh. It's seriously the biggest commitment ever, but I love it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just finished today, just finished The Heart of Everything That Is, which was great. Mm. Just kind of more historic nonfiction. It's a history book, but it was actually quite interesting regarding, like, the development of the West and, you know, good old-fashioned red man versus white man stuff, so.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But it was fascinating. So anyway, what about you? What was your favorite book in the last year? You're the one that got me so into that, because I was talking to another skier and she was like, did you know that Hadley reads? And I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to ask her about books. So give me one. Come on. I'm in you now.
I mean, I love Abe Lincoln, so probably The Team of Rivals, even though that's also a commitment. But I just have such a crush.
That's pretty rad. Actually, Abe played a fairly large part in The Heart of Everything That Is, at least the beginning of it. It's, you know, Homeboy was a pretty rad guy, and his involvement in the, you know, the Western territories and, like, some of the things that he, like, things that he passed to happen to the Native Americans, kind of, like, brutal. You're like, oh, Honest Abe was signing off, like, sure, kill the Indians.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like, oh, yeah. You're like, oh, gosh, that's not the way we envision
no.
Abe Lincoln, you know?
I know.
So, anyway, it's kind of fascinating. Well, it was during the Civil War, like, it was just post-Civil War, so, like, homie had a lot on his plate. We can't all be perfect, you know? But it was still kind of interesting to see, like, he signed off on, you know, a couple things that involved the elimination of quote-unquote problems in the Western territories.
Yeah, I know.
Good old-fashioned red man, you know? like, wait a second, Abe was supposed to be like, come on! He was supposed to be like, you know, like, civil rights bro, you know? Anyway, but, okay.
Yeah. Well, I know, it was so interesting. We were just at a summit that happens here every year called Shift. And Taylor Reese, who works with Renan and does, like, Camp 4 videos, was mentioned briefly kind of about this idea of, like, you know, it was about a sustainability-type conference. And we talk mm-hmm. about how she mentioned, like, look at what we did to create these national parks. Like, these national parks are amazing and incredible, but we also kicked a lot of people off of those lands to even have them. It's not all beautiful saving these sacred spaces. There's, well, we got to kick the people out that were there first, and then we'll save them.
That actually think that they're sacred.
Yeah.
And believe that we have to kick the people out that believe in their sacredness, you know, mm-hmm. before we actually, like, call them sacred. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, but that's just kind of... as sad as it is, that's the course of history, you know what I mean? Like, so.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. It's been a brutal read. That one was really hard. It was like, holy cow. And no one's innocent, like, at all.
Yeah. I mean, if even Abe isn't innocent, we're all screwed.
No, we're all screwed. Hell. We should just give up now. Not even close.
Well, speaking of history... One of the I always ask a bunch of people about what I should ask the guest, and Griffin posted suggestion was to talk about your early days as a pro when you lived with Billy Poole and Steckline and Cody, which are some of the rowdier people I've been in contact with, and if you can kind of describe what your life was like back then.
Dude, are you kidding? Like, Griffin was part of that life. Like, he was in and out of that house a lot. So he knows exactly. He knows what this question means. He's prompting. He's leading the witness. those were like just the best days ever. I don't even know how to start with that. Billy, like, and. You know, I met him randomly at a ski competition. Well, not randomly, I guess. I just, he's just the guy that you remember because he was super, he was louder than me. And he had, that's saying something. And he had like fluorescent orange, not kind of red, like orange hair. And he was a big dude. Most skiers are kind of, you know, they err on like maybe the petite side, you know. And this guy was just like an angry square, you know, just like thick and like just steam coming off of him and whatnot. And so obviously you remember him. So it's not like we really like hit it off, like particularly when I first met him, but then I saw him in the tram line, like, I don't know, a week later or something like that, or a month later, I don't even know. And I was like, hey, like we met in Crescent, like, how's it going? What are you doing here in Utah, you know? And he goes, I live here now. I was like, well, shit, I live right at the base of the canyon, you know, like, here's my number. Give me a call if you want to like, have a barbecue or hang out or something like that, you know. He called me up that day, literally, that day, showed up on my front porch with potato salad and barbecue meat and said, let's hang out. And he basically kind of didn't stop hanging out, like, ever. Aww. Literally. He, like, moved into my, he moved into my laundry room with his big dog, you know, and he was a great, great roommate, you know, totally random, living in the laundry room, and then after that, I followed him. He went over to the Casa de Shrednar, and that's the one that Griffin would know about, because it was Billy, Drew Steckline, Joey Smallwood, like Cody Barnhill was in and out, like just not like shred. Oh, dude, Drew. Brady Smedrew. It was like just like crush-tastic, amazing group of people, and rowdy and fun. And I like when we first moved into this place, like literally, actually before we moved into this place, Steckline and I were. I'm not even exaggerating either. Like, this is not an exaggeration. Like, but this is before I even moved in. I was like, this house is awesome. I'm like, I'll bet you we could do some bush diving. And so I get up on top of the house with Steckline, and he and I are throwing, like, flips, front flips, and, like off-axis, like, just, like, retarded hucks into these bushes, which is, like, a really great idea. It's a great idea when you have a little buzz. But the next day you wake up, and I mean, I was covered with scratches and, like, itchy bumps and, like, spider bites. And we laughed the whole time and giggled our asses off. But then the next day, we in the daylight, you see what you actually do to the bushes. We just, dude, we flattened the bushes. This is before we even, like, moved in, you know. So I'll never, Billy at one point was pitching, like, with the golf club. He's, like, found some golf clubs in the house, and he was all stoked, and he's like, I think I'm going to take up golf, you know? And we're just, you know, tooting around the backyard, and he was practicing chipping, you know? And he's like, I'll bet I could chip over the house. I'm like, that's a terrible idea. That is not going to be a good idea at all. And he chipped the ball and went right through the window. Like, right in front of him. He, like, shanked it and went right through the window, you know? And he just started laughing, just giggling. He's like, maybe that wasn't a good idea, you know? So, anyway. But just, like, from that to Cody, like, we threw a party, a Christmas party, and Cody Barnhill wore roller skates. And we put a helmet on him and tried to, like, run him through a wall with the helmet on it. Like, it was kind of not the smartest thing ever, but... You know, we had a riot doing it, and it was kind of nonstop like that. But then when it came to ski season, this is, like, not an exaggeration. Billy woke me up every single day. Like, come on, Marks, let's go, you know? And it was dark and, like 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, what the hell is, like, I mean, like, come on, Dad, 5 more minutes, you know? I mean, the guy was already, like, flipping eggs and getting a breakfast sandwich ready, bagel breakfast sandwich every day, like a nice, like, seriously delicious breakfast sandwich. And then we were eating and on the road, you know, and there wasn't a day that we didn't go skiing, you know? We skied every day. And it was really fun to shred around with those guys because, like, you know, Julian was a part of it, too, and... You know, Billy, Julian, Drew, Griffin, like homies, just hucking and chucking. Pretty cool. Billy asked me once, he's like, or he asked me that year if I was going to ask for, like, try and get a pass. And I didn't have any publications. I didn't have any, like, really accolades at that point. Like, I had, like, one good finish in a comp and then another kind of mediocre kind of finish, you know, and, like, didn't really have any sponsors, you know. Smith had given me a pair of goggles, which was awesome. But, like, Billy was kind of on the team, and I wasn't, but he was kind of, you know, trying to get me on the team. And he's like, Rachel, you really should go up to Alta, tell them, like, your plan to compete, tell them your plan to shoot with photographers and you really want to be an athlete and just go up there and give it a shot. What do you have to lose? You know, like, what do you have to lose? And I was like, well, you know, that's a good point. So I made an appointment and I went in with, like, my little tiny, tiny, tiny portfolio, which is so not, like, anything to write home about, you know, and just said, hey, you know, I really want to, you know, shoot a lot this winter, and I really would love to be at Alta, and, you know, I would really like some help with a pass, and they gave me a pass. Alta gave me a pass. It was my first pass, and I walked out of the office and called Billy and just started bawling.
Oh.
Just like, oh, I got a free pass, and he... All I could hear is him laughing on the other end because he was all like, ha, ha, I knew they were going to give you one. I just wanted to not tell you that. So he, like, totally put in a good word for me, and I appreciate it. And he's like, I knew they were going to give me one. So that was kind of cool. That was a cool thing. And shredding around with Cody Barnhill and Julian, that was just, like, that was fun stuff, man. You shred with people that are way better than you, and it makes you a lot better at skiing, you know?
Yeah, and so then did you start diving into competitions a lot more after that?
Yeah, I was already kind of, like, wanting to do as many as I possibly could, but that was when, but I did the whole U.S. free skiing tour and then competed on the European free skiing tour too after that, and yeah, so that kind of started it, and then I dove more into competition after that. Yeah.
What were those kind of early competition days like? I mean, I feel like when I look at those comps, it's like the heyday, like you and Ingrid and Jeff Baker and Jamie Burch, and you're just like, oh my god, it's like everyone.
it's pretty so cool hard. It's pretty cool to say that, like, I saved all my, well, not all, but as many as I could. I saved all my start list for all of those comps. Dude, you should see the names on those start lists. Like, I mean, it is, like, someday, I'm by no means and will never be, like, one of the more, quote-unquote, like, famous skiers, you know? Like, I'm not quite that top echelon, if you will, but, like, I was on the list with all of them, you know, and we were all on the same start list at one point, you know, and it's pretty exciting to see how, I mean, we were a family, we were homies, you know, none of us had, like, egos or confidence or, like, really any sort of presence in skiing. We were just super, super, super stoked, you know, just, like, you know, hungry, you know, but we'd all just finish the comp and then go have these amazing, you know, parties afterwards where I was just shooting the shit with some of the best skiers in the world now, you know, and they're family, and that's kind of exciting. And the comps were really, really, really fun, you know, but at the same time, there were, you know, that was one of the things that kind of fueled my fire, though. There were a lot of instances where women were rewarded for just staying on their feet, you know, and not really jumping or doing anything particularly difficult, but just, you know, skiing fluid and beautiful to the bottom. And that was just, oh, God, that irked me, Hadley. That drove me freaking nuts. And so that was one of the things that really fueled my fire. Oh my gosh, I was so mad sometimes, like, watching a winning line, and I'm at the bottom, like, I'm like, come on. Like, that can't be the winning line. Because you watch the guys and what they're doing, and it's just, I mean, you're just, I never saw that line on the mountain. Holy shit, I would never think to do a flip off of that. Like, how did he get that much air? I didn't even see a jump there. Or, you know what I mean? You're watching those lines, totally. You're like, what on earth is going on? And, like, they're throwing down, you know? And then there were, you know, the girl lions that were doing really well in the competitions that were like, I'm like just embarrassing. But don't get me wrong, because there was a lot of the opposite as well, you know?
So, yeah. Well, and it's not like those girls don't have the potential to. It's just like, if you're smart and you don't have to, I feel like the system is set up that way where you're incentivized to take those lines almost because it's a guaranteed win and that's a guaranteed money or in the next stop on the next tour or whatever. And it's
right.
Just hard to fight against that system and frustrating on all sides. I feel
it is. That it is. But I just fought it the only way I possibly could, and that was to just continually choose lines that didn't usually end up that well. I ate shit way more than the average Joe, but it was always fun. Like, it was always like, oh, Rachel's up. Who knows what the hell she's going to do, you know? Like, literally,
yeah.
Like, what on earth is she going to... Like, there was a lot of exploding on my behalf, so... But, you know, people like to watch that, and it's more entertaining than I never, ever, ever, ever entered a comp and toned it down. Like, I just,
yeah.
Actually, that's not true. One time, Billy really got on me, and he's like, Burks, you just need to stay on your feet. Don't you understand that you would, like, win something if you just stayed on your feet? And I was like, whatever. I'm like, the guys never stay on their feet, and I'm not going to stay on my feet, you know. But this one cop, I did kind of stay on my feet. And I stayed on my feet, obviously didn't ski very well, because I was just hoping to make it to the next day type thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I got cut off anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first one at the cutoff line, and I remember being livid. I was like, I will never make that mistake again. If you ain't first, you're last. Like, and
yep.
That is where I'm gonna either explode trying, or I'm gonna put it together one day and be on top, you know? Like, we'll
yeah.
see. So things didn't ever really work out that well for me. But I did I got a third place in at Kirkwood. This is like the, you know, the free skiing national or finals or whatever, you know. It was a big deal, and I really hadn't been on the podium, like, at all, pretty much. I didn't compete at all that year. I just literally was like, oh, I'm not doing anything. I might as well go to this cup. And it's the end of the year, and it's always fun because it's Kirkwood, and I love the Cirque at Kirkwood. It's a super fun venue that if you haven't ever skied it, it's the bomb. It's so cool. And it's permanently closed, so they open it up for, you know, for this one comp or whatever. I'm like, oh, I'm going. And so I went, and I got third, and I tell people all the time, but, like, there has never in the history of first place been someone as stoked as I was about third place. I stood on that podium, and the pictures of me are hilarious because my smile is so big that my eyes just disappeared. I was so excited to get third place. It was the biggest deal ever, you know. And I think I won, like, you know, $200 or something,
yeah.
you know. But I was just like, yes, that pays for my trip, you know. I was so excited. Anyway,
yeah.
So that's my competition history right there. Like my whole history. I just gave you a I just gave you a fantasy novel that was like 1,300 pages.
Down in 10 minutes. Podcast over. We're done.
I know. I only asked her one question and she just talked the entire time. Well, you asked the right question, man. I could talk about like those early days forever, man. We had the best time. We decided one year that we were going to go Dapper instead of Steezy. This is like early. We decided that Dapper was the new Steezy. So like instead of like thug, like pants that were cheap, we wore, we went to the DI and all bought sweater vests and button up, like pearl button up shirts and skied in ties and bow ties, which is all, it's all fun and games except on a pow day when you're getting wet and your sweater vest just, it goes from like 2 ounces to 3 pounds, you know, maybe even 30 pounds, you know, you're just like, yeah. All of a sudden you're really heavy and your cotton button up, like pearl snap button shirt and tie are just like saturated and super wet. You're like, I don't know if we're just dapper or dumb right now. Like, we need to take that. But I did that for a while with the guys. That was pretty fun.
That's good. I feel like those early, people talk about competing and they're, oh, it like seems so intense. And I'm, those first few years are so fun because it is. It's just like a family of people. If you win, maybe you make enough money to cover your expenses, like sometimes not even. And you're there doing it for the love.
Absolutely. I mean, Hadley, let's be honest. I went to California and I skied for a week and had to pay for like my food, my drink, and my lodging. I'm pretty sure that the $200 that I won didn't pay for the trip, but it offset it, and I was stoked, you know. Yeah. It was such a family, and I mean that like from the bottom of my heart. I've been to more weddings of people that I used to compete with. It's just like, you know, everybody's growing up, and it's exciting. So crazy. Yeah.
What was the transition like? What was the transition like into filming?
Oh, I was. Oh man, I was so bad at it. I'll never forget my first line ever for the camera. It was at Alpental, Washington.
Uh huh.
And I had never skied in front of a camera before, ever, in my life. And it was, I told them what I was going to ski, and I skied about, this is not exaggerating, like I literally skied a quarter of a mile off where I said I was going to ski. So they didn't even like pick me up at all. They're like, what are you doing? And I was like, I mean, I have no idea. And they're like, You didn't even ski remotely what you said you were going to ski. I'm like, I know. I'm sorry. I have no idea what happened, you know. And then, so it didn't go very well. But then it was, I don't know. I'm not very good under pressure. I mean, clearly, as indicated by my competitive history, you know. I don't really do well with, like, spending a lot of time, energy, thought, like, sleeping on it, like stomach gut rot, just freaking out over one line, and everything's riding on that one line the next day. Like, that competition setting was really hard for me. I didn't really do well with that, I felt like filming was fabulous for me because it wasn't quite like that. The conditions, first of all, were much better than most of the comp conditions. I found myself like skiing powder for the camera. It was just like, what? How did I win the jackpot? I am so lucky. Like, that was like the best run ever, you know, and it got on film and it worked, and that was, I was like, jeez, this is the coolest chop ever. But also, you know, if there was a line I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd still lose sleep, and my gut would get all, like, bubbly and whatnot. I mean, I think I had to poop before every major line, you know? So that still happened. But at the same time, there's also this, like, you know, it's on your time. Take your breath. We'll roll the camera when you say you're ready. And then if something doesn't go great, it's not always a possibility, but it is a possibility to go back and try it again, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, in all honesty, what film setting do you actually, seriously have an opportunity to go back and shoot it again? Not many, you know? So a lot of it is like, you get one shot and you're done, you know? If you don't get it, then you don't get the shot. So a lot of it's like that. But then maybe you set up for one more shot, like an hour later, and you have another chance to at least produce something with your day. Whereas with the comp, it's like in your one run, if you don't deliver, then you're done skiing for the comp, you know? And that's the nice thing about the film setting for me was that even if I didn't get all of them, like, I still felt like I could be productive with a day, and maybe that's more the way I feel now. I don't know if that's totally true or not. I think it was travel and friends and good snow, and, I mean, filming was just more fun for me, I guess. There you go. All right. Got to the bottom of it. It was just more fun. So the transition, I got lucky that I shredded around with a lot of people. They had some film opportunities. I'd go out with them or... I got really lucky with the Levitation Project. They are no longer in existence, and who knows how that ended in the industry, if there's a bad taste or not, but, like, with some of that stuff. But they were a fabulous opportunity for me because, Billy and Jewel were on Levitation and, got with the owner of Levitation, and I was able to – and Cody. Cody's on Levitation, too. And I was able to go on – a couple trips with them, and that was like huge. I just got lucky, you know. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It was awesome. I got lucky. I'm stoked. I think back on those days, and whew, man, I got to go see Mica Creek before I had ever had any film segment ever in my life. I got to still go and ski Mica Creek, and that was on someone else's dime, on Levitation Project's dime, and it was incredible. Like, to this day, some of the best skiing. I just got lucky.
I don't think it was all luck. I have a feeling some of it was work.
I got lucky. No, I mean, I was working hard, don't get me wrong, but, you know, there's no way you can get better at something unless you're doing it every day, you know, and skiing with people that are better than you, and waking up at 3:00 in the morning so you could be on top of the mountain at 6:00, and, trying to shoot as much as I possibly could. That was definitely, I think, what set me apart from some of my friends that didn't really get into skiing. They wanted to, but they didn't actually end up getting into it as much. And it was because I felt like I was just, yes, I was lucky, but I was working harder. Like, I was working. I was trying to get my ass in front of a camera, whether it was a still camera or a motion camera, or like just trying to get ski images out there. And holy shit, man, I used to, like, because Billy worked really hard too. I mean, all those guys worked hard, you know, and everyone was up and trying to shoot every single day, whether it was like a sunrise sesh or whether it was a cliff sesh or whether it was storm sesh or maybe a sunset sesh, you know, or sometimes all of those in one day. It was just trying to take photos as much as possible, you know. But another thing that was rad was, like, this was kind of the beginning of, like Will Wissman was just getting on the scene. He wasn't even, like, he's so busy now, he doesn't even remember my name, you know. I hope he hears that. No, I'm kidding. No, but it's true, you know, like, he was just getting on the scene. Steve Lloyd was just getting on the scene. You know, Adam Clark was obviously already there, but he was still in town a little more and working with us some. And it was so fun because, like, there are a bunch of, like, photographers and local cinematographers that were trying to get out on the scene too. And so it was kind of all of us together being like, chomping at the bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's go out and work as much as we possibly can. But I got lucky with that. I was working with incredible photographers, you know? It's rad.
Yeah.
So.
That's crazy. I feel like your career kind of overlapped the time of the beginning where, you know, marketing was different and there was no such thing as Instagram or Facebook, and then it kind of, obviously, your career has lapped into time where that's a huge part of the game, and you kind of have said no to social media for the most part. Was what made that decision? How'd you make that decision for yourself?
The decision not to get on Facebook initially was just the incapacity to be able to say yes and no to, like, friend requests. That's just, like, that gave me anxiety. It still gives me anxiety just thinking about it, like, needing to accept or decline. Like, I just, you know, it doesn't, oh, God, that would give me, there's no way I can do that. That was just, I would not sleep at night. So I decided that wasn't going to be a case for me, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Like, just, and plus, you know, I just didn't want it all to be that accessible. I guess, you know? And then Instagram's been a blast. I really enjoy Instagram. It's so much fun. Oh my gosh. If Facebook is as fun as Instagram, then I'm glad I didn't join Facebook, just because I spend time on Instagram now, and I kind of, like, I get up from the toilet and I'm like, holy cow, I just sat on the toilet for like 30 minutes, you know, which I usually do anyway. But if Facebook were a part of that toilet time, I would have to time manage my time so that I planned out 1 hour of toilet time a day. And I just don't think I have that, you know? So, yeah, no, I'm lucky that that wasn't a part of my, I'm lucky. Hadley, I had nothing more to say except that I'm, like, about that, except that I just got lucky that I didn't have to do it, and I have no idea how hard it must be for an up-and-coming athlete right now to market both their athleticism and then, like, market their brand, like, as an individual, but if they're all in charge of their own marketing, you know? So in a way, mm-hmm. you have a chance to, oh, gosh, there are just different ways to get up there now, you know? And thank goodness it came down to some really epic crashes for me to get up there, but it didn't have to do with my presence online, you know? I got lucky.
I have one last question for you. I feel like you have always had your pulse on sort of the skiers that are up and coming. Who are some of the underrated skiers that you think are going to really crush it in the next few years?
Well, I definitely think that everyone at Alta is, like, especially all the little Groms. It's just silly watching these kids ski around at Alta. It's nuts. So there's a huge group of Groms that are doing that. And then I think underrated is so hard. I'm going to get a little personal, but I've always thought that your boyfriend was, like, one of the most underrated skiers. He's so good at skiing, and he's so mind-alteringly beautiful at skiing and creative and, like, he's got a great attitude. And, like, I look at Griffin, and I'm just like, dude, you're like, he's just like the whole, like, package badass skier, and I don't know if he's ever really gotten that part that he deserves. So, just so you know, I think your boyfriend is definitely one of them. But I don't know. So, you know, there's a lot of girls that are throwing down and skiing big lines, and, you know, maybe not getting anything that would encourage them financially to continue to do it, because they're just, you know, you're just keen on when you're 18, 19, you know, you're fresh out of college, you're like, I have to go work at, like, the Rustler for a little bit, or the P-Dog or whatever, and I'll make, like, minus $5 a day, you know, and, like, it's hard to then take your, you know, $5 or whatever you make and try and go and do comps and get noticed and get out with people and whatnot. So, I mean, I know that, you know, I rolled around with some really bitchin' little ripper chicks this year. I love little Caitlin Hughes. She's a ripper. Sydney Ricketts, that little chick's like doing, she's like 5'1", you know, and she's hucking backflips on huge fat Dina stars on hard pack days. Like, I'm serious. It's like super legit. She's like, I ran into her. She's like up there every day, right there on the hill. And she's like, oh, Burks, I got burned yesterday. And I'm doing the math. And I'm like, wait a second. It hasn't snowed for like 2 weeks, dude. Like, like, damn, dude. That's awesome. And shredded around with, yeah, Hannah Barkey. She was a little ripper this year. And Kate Hitchcock, a little ripper. It's kind of rad seeing these little itty bitties just there every single day, you know.
Yeah.
Rain or shine, just shredding. I ran into Hannah Barkey every day that I skied. And she's like in nursing school full time and still skied every day. And she finished top of her class. Like, she's just badass. That chick's awesome in my book. So anyway. Yeah, that's a tough question because there's so many. I mean, the little kids putting together their I'm forgetting Leeson Strom too. Holy shiza, that girl's ripper, 22 years old, you know, getting an international honor business degree or smart chick. English is her second language. She's Norwegian, you know. Like, I met her living in a tent, ski touring out of a tent in the Arctic Circle, freezing cold, blizzard temperatures she lived in that tent for 3 months. Like, oh. ski, her stuff never got dry. She was 19, you know. Like, I know, I was looking at her and I was, you know, inside the hostel. Oh, she was in a tent because she couldn't afford to stay in the hostel. Which is like, it's a hostel, dude. And I was staying in the hostel, drinking a beer, like looking out the window all cozy, being like, oh, ski's going to be so good tomorrow. And then I look out the back and there's this tent with these little 19-year-olds in it. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad that I'm 30 and wise.
Yeah.
I would not be in that
sucker.
Anyway, I know. But now she lives in Utah and she's crushing it. She skis so hard and so well. It's incredible. But yeah, the little groms that do the soup, those kids, dude, they're like better than, watching them ski around. Oh God, they're so good.
I spent half a season traveling with them once, and it was so hilarious because they're such good skiers, and, like, they'd start every day, and we'd be, like, eating breakfast wherever, like, in Canada or wherever we were, and they'd just be like, okay, how can we make today, like, the best day we've ever had? And you're like, whoa, that's a great perspective. Like, let's do it. And then they would. It'd be the best day ever.
Totally. It's like, you know, just the conditions are terrible. I'm skiing because I didn't work last winter and I could ski every day. And I'm watching these kids like straight line down icy, terrible, steep ass conditions switch, like straight lining switch on a steep icy day. And I can't even keep up with them going
forward
the hill. I'm serious. It's amazing. It's so cool. I'll hit like a little air and be all like, dude, I'm feeling good. Woo! You know, like, and then behind me will be a line, a full, like, a legitimate line, like, of six dudes that don't, and I, this is not exaggerating, they don't just hit the little air and do a, like, a little spread eagle and barely get off the ground. They're doing, like, misty sevens on a hard packed day with people in front of them and behind them. What?
Yeah.
If you crash and you're number one or number two on those screens, like, dude, it's like, whoa, you know? And they just, all day, every day, like, you want some of the best skiers in the world, they're at Alta, like, and they're like, in high school still.
Yeah.
they're gonna, let's just hope that the professional skier doesn't die, because those kids deserve, if they want it, they deserve some motherfucking recognition, because they're crushing it. So, anyway, that's the way I feel about that. Let's hope
that's
the professional skier doesn't die, because we need to encourage the little soup homies to just, like, take over the world, you know?
Yeah. I agree. The nuggets.
The nuggets. The little nuggets. They're so cute.
Yeah,
so
cute.
And they're so good at skiing.
I know.
Holy cow. Oh, man. Wow. It's awesome. So, anyway, yeah. So, let's just hope the nuggets. That's the most underrated guys in skiing, the nuggets.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I feel like that's the best place to end it.
Sounds good. Right
Thank
on.
You so
you
much,
can quote
Rachel.
Me on that.
I will.
Freaking love you, Ad. Thanks so much for calling. I wish we could do podcasts maybe without the recording every day.
Yeah.
Just chat for an
Phone
hour.
Call?
You ask me one question and I just talk for an hour. No big deal.
Okay. It's actually like my dream.
That wraps up episode 2 of Powder Radio's Nausicaa Cast. Thank you, Berks, for coming on the show, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in.